Hello and welcome to A Gram of Hope. I'm your host, C. Jerome Graham. You know, on today's episode, we'll be speaking with Dr. Lasharde Scott. Now, you may have heard that name. You may not have heard that name, but sometimes the name is not as important as what the person does. And then everyone wants to know, how did we get here? Who's behind all of this? Who is the one that's making this happen? Well, Dr. Scott is just one of those people that when she sees that there is a need for something to manifest, something to come together, she gets right in there and she makes it happen. You've heard that old saying that necessity is the mother of invention. She's the mother of fruition. Necessity has brought a lot of things to fruition in her life. Good morning, Dr. Scott.
Thank you for having me.
But we're going to dig into a lot of your background, because what's impressed me about you is how far you've come and all the things that you've accomplished. I mean, you started from the bottom, now you're here, and you got your doctorate degree the old-fashioned way. You flat out earned that thing. Now, I'm talking about, that's impressive. What was your motivation? What made you even go to school? Because you didn't start out of high school saying, you know what, I'm going to get my doctorate degree. Or did you?
No, not at all. My only hopes was just to become a secondary education teacher, which all of that changed due to the trajectory of finding out the diagnosis of my two younger children being diagnosed with sickle cell disease.
Okay. Now, you're from the legendary Motor City. You're from Detroit, Michigan.
Yes.
When you were in Detroit, and a lot of people refer to Toledo as the suburb of Detroit, what was your perception of Toledo? Did you guys even talk about Toledo? Because I lived in Detroit, and the conversation was, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be successful in Detroit, then I'm going to move to Toledo.
No.
What was you guys' perception of Toledo, Ohio?
So to be honest, the only time I ever talked about Toledo is when I went off to college originally, because I had roommates that were from Toledo, Ohio. And shockingly enough, they left Toledo and went to Detroit, and I left Detroit and came to Toledo. So we laugh about that a lot, but it's different. My experience is different from being from Detroit and coming to Toledo. I'm very outgoing. I'm ambitious. And if I say I'm going to do something, I stick to that and I make it happen. And I think sometimes, and this is no disrespect to Toledoans, but be that I am from a bigger city, we can be selling the same product, doing the same things, and everybody's going to support and show up. And that has not always been my experience here in Toledo, unfortunately. But when life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. And I've happened to, you know, take that to show people that we can collaborate and do things together and still win.
So your personality is so dynamic that people will say, if it works for her, maybe we need to listen and find out how she's doing, as opposed to, let's do it first before she does it, so that they don't get ahead of you, because you have a leadership type of a personality.
Yeah.
Was that the same way in high school?
Yes. I've been this person my whole life.
Now, when you were in high school, we all did something. Look, I unloaded trucks. I bagged groceries. I even took care of gardens. You know, we all had a hustle in high school. What was your hustle in high school?
So I begged for my first job at the age of 14. I worked at Hungry Howie's. There were a set of twins that gave me an opportunity. Mind you, I wasn't supposed to start working until I was 14 to 8 months. But they let me start at 14. And then when I turned 15, I became the shift supervisor. So I worked that job my whole high school years.
At 15, you were the shifts. Who listened to you?
they were upset, but I had once they saw what type of person I was and how, you know, driven I am, the respect just came with it. I was not your average 15-year-old.
Now, you shift supervisor. Look, a lot of people would say, I got it made because as shift supervisor, you make a little bit of coin. And you're 15 years old. Correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably still living in your parents' house.
Yep.
How many siblings were?
I had one brother.
Okay, so you're a shift supervisor at a major restaurant chain. Money coming in, and it looks like you didn't intend on stopping because then you went to college.
Yes.
And did you apply for a lot of scholarships or what have you? Or you said, you know what? I'm going to save my money and let somebody else pay for this college.
So, yes, I saved my money. I ended up buying a car. Actually, my mom bought a car, but she made me put money up for a car. So it went towards my car insurance.
Because you're a shift supervisor. You can afford to kick in some money.
So I had a car when I was 15, and I knew that I was going to get scholarships because my ACT scores were really great. So the scholarship issue wasn't an issue for me. So my money just pretty much stacked up. So when I went off to school, I can just focus on studies.
And education was going to be your pursuit?
Yes.
What got you into being a community health care worker? Because that has some elements of education to it, but that's not the education I think you had in mind, was it?
So before we can even go there, so I have to tell you, so I ended up leaving college my last year. I was doing my student teaching. I didn't like it. So I got to be transparent. I didn't like it. I ended up getting a job at Quicken Loans. I was making six figures. So I'm like, school, what's that, right? My mom was upset. I told her I would go back. So I ended up going, working for Quicken Loans for quite some time.
Wait, did your mother know you were making six figures at Quicken Loans?
No, because I don't share a lot of my, it's
That's
funny.
That's why she was upset.
Yeah, she was, but it's okay. So what I ended up doing, they ended up laying us off, my department. So this was probably about 4 years later. And I ended up having my first son. And then I had my second son. And that's when I got the diagnosis of sickle cell disease from Emory in 2015. And I said, well, I just found out I'm pregnant again. Here it is, 2016, or 16 months apart. I said, if this child has sickle cell, then clearly God has another plan for me. Because what is literally the odds of having two kids back to back with sickle cell disease? And that is what happened. So I tried to reach out to an organization here. They didn't provide enough resources for me, so that led me to go back home to Detroit and get the help that I needed. I worked for Sickle Cell Disease Association of America as their community health worker because she ended up paying for me to become a community health worker. I ended up enrolling back into college for social work.
Okay.
So that is where that all started from. It stemmed from me going back to school, getting their diagnosis, going back to school, and then I joined the class for community health workers.
All right. So what was happening in your home environment? Did that prepare you for education? Because a lot of times it's the flip side, but your home environment was your motivation to go to school. Mm-hmm. So did you take some understanding of dealing with people and what you wanted your education to look like when you went into that environment?
So my home environment was crazy at the time. We actually had got my husband's siblings out of foster care. So we got our four boys now. We have four boys. We were taking care of his younger two siblings. So it just wasn't. It was like, we just got to make some changes. You know, we have to do something different. He's always been in his career. You know, he's an environmental scientist. And I said, you know what? I'm constantly in and out of the hospital with one of our children. I can be doing homework while I'm sitting here at this hospital. So that was my thought process, just sitting there and not having anything to do outside of looking at him in pain or, you know, just being in that space. It just made me want to do something different.
Now, see, you say, your mind, I could do some homework while I'm sitting here. They had cell phones then, didn't they?
Yeah.
Most people, when they're sitting stagnant. Don't think about, oh man, I could be doing homework while I'm sitting here. Their thought is, I could be on Facebook, I could be on Instagram, I could be on Digital Planet or whatever it was back then. Your mind said, I could be doing homework.
Yeah.
That makes you a different individual.
It does. Well, one, I always loved school. I've always been great at it. I've always been a straight A student my whole life. So school is like my peace, right? That's why I keep going back. But but I'll say this. I'll say I didn't want their diagnosis to stop me from being who I am. And I wanted to be an advocate for my boys. That's what it originally started out as, just advocating for them and knowing how to advocate and what to advocate for. But knowing that there weren't a lot of resources here in Northwest Ohio, when I had the opportunity to bring those resources here, I have been nonstop because I never wanted another family to fill the void that I felt finding out that diagnosis of my children.
When did you write the book?
Oh, the children's book?
Yes.
So my husband and I wrote that book while I was working in Michigan as the community health worker. My oldest son at the time, he was 4, so he was starting to read. And I said, what better way to teach him than to put it in a book? I mean, you know, kids, that's how they learn. They learn from reading and seeing, right? So we wrote this book through the eyes of my oldest child that has sickle cell. We wrote it through his eyes. And my oldest, who does not have sickle cell, he understood it. So I said, if he understands it, other people will too. So we ended up self-publishing the book and selling it. And the national office uses the book. It's in a couple libraries. I actually just got it in Toledo's library recently, so I'm super excited about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So, yeah, just being able to provide that information. And there wasn't a lot of representation with young Black boys diagnosed with, you know, sickle cell or just any representation outside. It's an older book that's out, but to me, I didn't feel like it didn't do enough or tell enough. So I'm one of those people, I don't complain about it. I just make it happen.
You know, even though based upon your understanding of where the book is, it's an older book, for someone else who has not read it or who has not had the experience to them, it's brand new.
Yes.
It just depends on where you start at, and then you move forward from there. The name of the book, I should have asked you, what was the name of the book?
What Dr. Sherney Taught Me, and it's available on Amazon.
Say that name again, Dr.
Sherney.
Dr. Sherney. How do you spell that in case someone wants to go looking for that book? Because that might be a hard one to spell.
So it's S-H-U-R-N-E-Y.
S-H-U-R-N-E-Y.
Yes.
And Dr. Sherney was local, Toledo, or Detroit?
She's Detroit. So she's over the Sickle Cell Disease Association of Michigan. And her father, Dr. Charles Witten, he is the individual who, one, founded the National Sickle Cell Organization, and two, he founded the detection for sickle cell trait. So we owe a lot to him. He's no longer with us, but thank God for Dr. Witten.
He laid the foundation.
Yes, he did.
Now, Your husband's a chemist?
He's an environmental scientist.
I never met one of those I didn't like. Was he an environmental scientist before you guys left Detroit?
So he's been here in Ohio since he went to Bowling Green State University.
Okay.
So he is from Detroit, but he's been here since 2005. I met him through a friend in Detroit, and he brought me to Toledo.
That sounds like a really good friend. Most of the time, those don't work out, but that friendship sounds like, and your husband was a scientist, but he now has a master's degree.
Yes, in business administration.
Do you guys consider yourself a power couple?
We do.
I mean, because you meet the criteria. and is there, going back to the sickle cell, did both of you have a positive gene of sickle cell, or how did that work?
Yes. So in order to have a child with sickle cell disease, both parents have to carry sickle cell trait.
Okay.
So we both carry one gene, and there is a 1 in 4 chance of having a child in each pregnancy with sickle cell disease.
Okay. So you knew what you were getting into prior? No, you did not.
No. So I knew my diagnosis. Like I said, we're both from Detroit. It was not mandated until June of 87. So that's the year and month I was born. He was born December of 86.
Okay.
So he was not tested at birth.
Okay.
But now.
But now.
The United States, every baby should, it was mandated as of 2006 to test every baby at birth for all of the different hemoglobinopathies, cystic fibrosis, all of those things. So it's been mandated since 2006.
You know, hemoglobinopathy just rolled off your tongue real smooth. You've been doing this a while. And you obviously, you know your business. How big of an area, or how large is your region that you cover for sickle cell?
So I work in 11 counties for Northwest Ohio.
You work 11 counties. You have 4 boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty good-sized fellas.
Yep.
You have a husband.
Yes.
How do you do it? Where do you find the energy?
So I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I don't know. I know it's passion. I know it's purpose. But when I get home, that's my peace. So everything cuts off. Like I come in from a long day, I shower, and it's about my kids, my husband. Like, that's it. That's all that matters. The rest of the world is cut off. But the other hours before I get home, I'm grinding. I'm working, you know, whether it's me writing publications, providing counseling services, or doing a vendor table, whatever. If it's on the calendar, it'll happen.
You're a Zeta.
Yes.
Do you hold a position with that organization?
I do a hold too.
So that's going to pull you in a direction.
Yes.
Local chapter or national chapter?
So I'm going to adopt a school chair person for our local chapter. So we have 2 schools that we do a lot of services for, El Hollingworth and Hawkins. And then I'm also the Great Lakes Regional adopt a school. So no, it's actually 7 states that I cover. And I am helping make sure that we bring visibility to the adopt a school initiatives that we do for, you know, the Great Lakes.
All right. Now, someone would say, wow, that's impressive. She's a family woman. She takes care of her family. She shuts things down. But while she's out here, she's handling the sickle cell responsibilities, getting information out, counseling, encouraging. She's a Zeta. She has 2 positions there, Great Lakes. And then all of a sudden, there's this spirit of accomplishment or self-actualization that pops up and says, wait, there's more. The I want to get this right, NASW.
Yes.
That is?
The National Association of Social Workers.
And under the heading of wait, there's more, what do you do with them?
So I am the board of directors for 19 counties of Northwest Ohio, but I also have a co-chair, Linda Rolett, shout out to her, for helping me kind of pass some initiatives for social workers in this area. So we do a lot of fellowship, a lot of advocacy, and just a support system outside of our organizations, because there's so much that social workers do that people just really don't realize. We do a lot.
Such as?
So I know a lot of people think social work is just case management or child welfare. It is so much more than that. We are in the schools. We run organizations at executive levels. We work with veterans. I mean, medical social workers, there's just so many spaces that we're in. Social work is in a lot of spaces. So I don't like when people limit the profession. That's just my take on it.
Well, obviously, if they were to talk to you, they would see that you are no limit soldier. I hate to steal someone else's moniker, but you don't have boundaries that inhibit you from accomplishing a lot of tasks.
Right.
And for somebody who worked at a restaurant,
yeah.
I mean, I have not even opened up the door to where you truly are, which is your true passion, and that's the Scott Center. Mm-hmm. SCOTT is the acronym for what?
Scott Center for Observation, Treatment, and Transition.
Okay, so we're talking to the CEO and president of the Scott Center. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you said you get home, you close the door, and just got the family. But what do you do when you're in your office? Because when you're in your office, 11 counties are your family.
True. So a lot of times I'm not really in the office space. I mean, I am, but I'm not. If people want to come to the office, they typically have to make an appointment because it's just me that I'm going to these different schools and educating, and I'm in a community, a different vendor, you know, as a vendor. Anywhere that I'm able. It's been times I've stood on a corner and I'm just passing out information because I have to get it out there, right? I think our community needs to be a little bit more receptive. You might not personally be impacted, but there's people around you that are, and they're not sharing that with you. So to even have a level of understanding and just the knowledge, the basic knowledge base of like what sickle cell trait is, what sickle cell disease is, who's impacted, because Ohio is so diverse. We have Latinx community, we have Hispanics, we have people that are Asian. All of these people are impacted.
By outside, sickle cell.
Yes.
So Asian people get sickle cell.
Yes.
They're not black.
Anywhere there's a little melanin somewhere, you are impacted.
See, I don't think a lot of people realize that, because the history of heralding the issue of sickle cell is usually not ascribed to any other group except African American. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because we're more impacted by it than another group or what the case is. But I'm glad that you're sharing that other groups are impacted.
Yep.
Now, you said people have to call you to make an appointment. Mm-hmm. How did they get in touch with you?
So they will call 419-301-4188, and you can set up an appointment with my assistant.
Is there a page that we can look at to get information from that page to see what you're doing and taking place and find out something about the disease itself?
Yeah, so you can just visit the website. We share all of those things, what's going on in the community. So scottcenteroh.org.
Say that again, because it came out real smooth.
So scottcenteroh, that's all one word, .org.
Okay. What do you see the Scott Center in 5 years?
Ooh. So I don't want to put a limit on myself, but I definitely see me being in a couple other states outside of Ohio. I've been asked, so that's in the works right now. So I see that. I see an expansion of medical services for patients. So we'll be like a one-stop shop sort of. There's just a lot. Like, I see a lot of different things for patients. It's going to be a place of empowerment. I mean, it's already that, but I see it elevating even higher.
One of your sons will probably be in medical school by then.
No. You said 5 years, so no. Actually, my oldest will be graduating from high school. Yes.
Then the real life starts.
Yes. So hopefully I can get someone to go into social work and hematology. I empower them all the time, so I'm, you know, we got four boys, so there's an opportunity to have a little bit of Everything.
Now, do you have any regular workshops? Let's say someone is listening to this, I don't know, in November. Are there regular workshops set up so that people can come to them, like or a group that may meet once a month, once a quarter, so that they can sit down and talk about what they're dealing with and share their stories?
Yes. So Scott Center is collaborating with Sickle Cell Awareness Toledo, so they go by SCAT. Every third Thursday of the month, they meet at Mott Library from 6 to 8.
Okay. See, wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
And the reason I guess I wasn't aware of it, you don't hear as much conversation about sickle cell as you did back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
Is it because the disease has just about been eradicated, or the money just went away?
Okay, so that's a very impactful question.
I only ask the good ones.
Yeah. So first, definitely there's not a lot of funding anymore with sickle cell. We know at one point everybody, it was sexy because it was the thing to talk about, right? But you do have grassroots level organizations still pushing that focus.
Like yours.
Yes. The other part is the patients, they're not as trusting. They don't want you to feel sad for them. They don't want, you know, so SCAT is a little different. We do a lot of fun activities, a lot of, you know, it's not really your typical support group. We don't want to make it seem like we're just talking about sad stories all day. We bring the kids around. We at the zoo. We go to the Imagination Station. Like, we do a lot of family building. So I tell people, anybody that's coming, come on out. Let's fellowship. Bring your grandma. Bring your auntie. Bring everybody. You know, anybody that's in your circle, so that they understand it's not always bad times. So we try to highlight the good moments.
Yeah, I read somewhere, Dr. Scott, that when you're talking to people that are dealing with sickle cell, you ask the hard questions. Mm-hmm. I got sickle cell. What are the hard questions?
I know a lot of people typically ask, what's the life expectancy? And I personally, I don't put an expectancy on it. Like, no doctor can tell you that. They can speculate. But no one, God has the last say, so that's one.
I like that.
But two, we could leave out of here today, God forbid, and get into an accident, right? So what's the life expectancy on that? So to put a time frame on how long a person is going to live, that is detrimental to their health. That's just how I feel. Because they're constantly looking for that age, and they're not living. So I don't put a life expectancy. But that is a question that comes up. So I say, just live the best life that you see fit for you. And do all the things that you want to do with no regrets. So even with my own kids, we are traveling. Emery is a daredevil all day. I mean, we went to Disney last year, and he made me get on every ride, the very front seat, and then had the nerve to ask me why I was screaming. The thrill, right? So it's things like that. I just like to empower and let patients know, live your life and live it to the fullest. You're going to have bad days, even if you didn't have sickle cell. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have good days. So when you have the good days, make those days count.
Yeah, live your life will work across the board. That's just a good mantra to have.
Yes.
Period. What are some of the things that you like the community to keep in mind about sickle cell and what you do?
Like I said, just keep in mind that this condition impacts more than just African Americans. We need to continue to share this particular initiative. I am heavy in the schools because kids spend more time in school than they do at home. So if we spark that conversation at school, then it's already embedded in their head. They have an understanding of just the basic. Because I grew up in Detroit, 60% of the population has sickle cell trait. And the only thing I've ever been told was, don't have a baby with someone with sickle cell trait or sickle cell disease, or you can have a kid with sickle cell. And sickle cell disease is an inherited blood disorder. That's all I've ever heard. So I didn't know the other things that I needed to be aware of just being a trait carrier. So flying high altitudes, if I fly to Colorado, I have to ask for extra oxygen because the air is thin. And that could potentially cause my blood to sickle. Tiki Barber got his spleen removed from playing football in Colorado. Yeah. So it's things like that. I can't scuba dive or my blood could sickle. Not that I ever wanted to scuba dive, but there may be some brave person that wants to scuba dive that has sickle cell trait.
They didn't know about that unless they listen to this. So I don't know how we're going to get this beyond to all the scuba divers out there.
Right.
But that's something to think about.
And then even the eye care. So I've always gotten my eyes checked. So there's this condition called retinal retinopathy, and it impacts sickle cell trait and sickle cell disease patients. So you have to get your eyes checked regularly. You should be getting them checked yearly for that if you have sickle cell trait. You should be getting them checked regardless. Yes. But more importantly, if you are diagnosed with sickle cell trait or sickle cell disease, because there could be some issues with your eyes. And anywhere that there's blood flowing, I think people don't realize that that is an impact for those patients.
No, they don't think about it because there's sickle cell and there's blood flow. And the two don't naturally coincide in someone's mind.
Right.
But it's the same thing.
Yep.
Your sickle cell is your blood.
Yes.
So you really pointed out some things. Now let me ask you, Hungry Howies.
We going back here?
Yeah, we're going to go back because I just like the fact that you started from the bottom, now you're here.
Yes.
Has it sunk in yet that you are Dr. Lasharde Scott? Do you look in the mirror and just say, wow?
My kids, let me tell you something. Thank God for those boys. They are the ones that hype me up. Those are my hype men for sure. Everything I do is rooted for them. Everything I do is about them. So they have to remind me that I am Dr. Scott. And it's rewarding, but it's weird. So no, it hasn't sunk in all the way. I was at an event and the young lady was like, what's your name? And I was like, oh, I'm Sharde. And my co-chair said, no, she's Dr. Scott. And I'm like, it's just weird, you know, because to me, I only got the degree so that I can create more impact on the research side for sickle cell patients. So it's not self-serve. It was literally for the patients and what I'm trying to create here.
It opened business doors for you.
Absolutely.
Avenues of opportunity.
Absolutely. So that was my reason for going. And I was actually encouraged by one of the hematologists that I worked with here in Toledo. He's no longer here. He's in Cleveland now. But he encouraged me to go and get my doctorate because I was already doing a lot of different studies for the different hospitals. He said, you need to go ahead and get those last two letters. And I said, I don't know, because I had just finished a master's program. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. And he said, I need you to leave here and go look online for a program. So
wow.
He encouraged that.
And look how far you've come.
Yes.
Congratulations, Dr. Scott.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you for being on the program. You've really brought some serious insight. You give people a lot to think about. I want to tell them one more time how they can contact you and give them that webpage that they can go and look on for more information.
Yes, so you can visit scottcenteroh.org or you can call 419-301-4188.
Thank you for being on today's show.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
I'm your host and producer, C. Jerome Graham. Our executive producer is Chris Piper. If you have any questions, comments, or you just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/hope or wherever you stream your podcast.
WGTE. voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.